Hello and welcome to the Hits Record Time podcast. I'm your host, Alex, and this is the show where each week I'm joined by a different guest to talk about their favourite albums, biggest influences, and the bands that they love. This week I was joined by Holly Hole, bassist for English post-punk band Goat Girl. Back in January 2021, Goat Girl released their second album, On All Fours, and I'm very confident already that it's going to be in my albums of the year list come December. Holly was absolutely great to talk to. We talked about some brilliant albums, and I'm very grateful for her coming on. All the albums we talked about are in the show notes as well, so you can find them all there, along with links to Goat Girl socials, and mine are probably down there as well. I do want to give a quick content warning at the start of the episode, as we do touch on some quite difficult topics early on in our chat, including murder and abuse, so please bear that in mind. I'm going to be back at the end for a bit more chat, but until then, enjoy. Thank you, Holly. Thank you for coming on. How are you today? How's your day been?
Yeah, I'm all right. Not too bad. I don't know, the last week's been pretty mad, you know, politically, and just feeling, quite angry about a lot of things that are going on in that regard. Me and Rosie actually went down to protest yesterday, so that was quite full on. But today is a bit calmer, planted some spring onions in the garden, so...
Was that the protester at Scotland Lot?
Yeah.
Did you want to give a bit of context to that? Because obviously we have people that listen to the show in countries all over the world, and some of the details might be a little bit lost.
Yeah, of course. So basically, it's been a bit of a mad week for people that don't identify as male. I guess we had, it's Women's History Month at the moment, and then we had International Women's Day last week as well. And then... shortly after that, we had the confirmation that Sarah Everard, who's a woman that lived in London, basically got abducted and murdered on her way home by a member of the Metropolitan Police. So it's awful. Someone I know actually knew her quite well. And it's just been horrible seeing that whole thing unfold, from someone going missing, people trying to find her, to find out what's happened. And I think it's just ignited, like... It's just it's just enough's enough, really. And a lot of people, you know, women are constantly feeling unsafe on the streets, just walking around them, going home. And I think it's all just sort of boiled over this week, and people are really fed up with the kind of violence, constant violence against women and trans people, non-binary people. It's not talked about enough. It's not dealt with enough. It's always sort of framed in a way of like... victim blaming, or blaming those people, rather than dealing with the people who are actually acting out violence against them. Obviously there was a vigil that was meant to go ahead, and it is tricky because of COVID and things like that, but it is a human right to be able to protest, and it wasn't a protest anyway, it was a vigil which was meant to take place on Saturday, and then that was sort of met with more violence by the police. And then there was another protest yesterday in Scotland Yard that me and Rosie went to attend because we felt like it was important to be there.
It's an unbelievably tragic story, and the actions of the police over the last few days they've just escalated what should have been a moment of reflection and a moment to remember Sarah. It's incredibly horrible, and it's truly shocking.
It isn't. That for this to happen and happen at the hands of a police officer is quite shocking, and it is quite rare. But at the same time, the kind of brutality, the excessive force that is used by the police isn't a surprise, unfortunately. And it's kind of to see the treatment of the women that were trying to attend a vigil peacefully the other night versus the treatment that's been seen with crowds of male football fans. It's astonishing, really. Anyway, maybe we should discuss.
Yeah.
Something a bit later, maybe, but.
Hi, everyone. Alex here. Just wanted to jump in at this point and say I know that this probably isn't how you expect a podcast about music recommendations to start, But I was very keen to keep the conversation you just heard in, as it's a really important message, and I think that Holly speaks about it very well. I've added in some links in the show notes to a couple of organizations that have more information and ways to help and to organize as well. The episode from here is much more like our regular episodes, but like I said, this was something that I really felt needed to be included, and I want to thank Holly for talking about it as well. As we're talking then, it's middle of March time, so we're about 5 or 6 weeks out from the release of the second Goat Girl album. Mm-hmm. How's the response to the record been over that time? Obviously, COVID and everything else in mind, it's been a slightly odd time to release a record.
Yeah, it has. The response that we've seen online and just feedback from people through social media, like fans and press and all of that kind of stuff, has been really amazing, really humbling and very, like, quite overwhelming, really. Like, it's just been so well received. And I think, I don't know, like, obviously we believed in it and we thought it was good. But it's really nice to know that other people have resonated with it. There's a lot of people saying that they've related to, like, the content of some of the tracks, which has been really nice to hear, especially when people have been sort of going through a tricky time like lockdown. So that's a really amazing thing to hear. Yeah, it was kind of a weird time, but it kind of was the soonest we could physically do it, really, with we'd recorded it quite a while ago anyway, finished it in 2019, but we'd had sort of various personal things going on. Ellie was poorly and things like that, so we basically it got put on hold for quite a long time, and then obviously the pandemic happened, but we didn't really want to wait much longer, and we had lots of time to put into, you know, making videos and thinking about the press shots and creating, like, this whole kind of world around it, which I think was worthwhile. And that's been really nice, rewarding thing to do and keep us busy as well. And yeah, it's kind of weird not to have played it. Like, we haven't played the songs live, really. We played a couple of them, like, before they were finished. But it's kind of weird not to have that physical reaction, because normally when you write a new song and you play it for the first time at a show or something, you can kind of gauge how it goes down. So we haven't really had the full kind of experience of, and I'm looking forward to that, and hopefully maybe by the time we can play, people might know the tracks a bit better, they might be a bit more familiar with them, and we can all have a good time together.
You've got tour dates in for the UK for September, and I think European tours for February next year.
Yeah, at the moment, that's the plan. We're hoping that's all good.
So obviously it's Goat Girl's second album, but it's your first one with the band. So you joined the band in 2018?
Yes.
How did you become a member, basically? How did you end up joining?
Naima left in the sort of summer of 2018, I guess. And the timing just worked out really weirdly well for me. I don't know, sometimes I feel like things are just fall into place. I'd sort of been doing various full-time jobs and stuff, and then I went somewhere else part-time to try and have a bit more time to do creative things and music things. So I was feeling a bit frustrated. Even though I liked where I worked and stuff, I was frustrated that I wasn't doing the thing that I wanted to be doing. And it was kind of at the time when I'd sort of walked out of this part-time job that turned out to be it was a nightmare. I had to sort of strop out and never go back. And it was at that moment I kind of essentially became unemployed, which is pretty out of character for me. I'm normally quite organized. And it was just, that exact moment that I found out that Naima was leaving the band. So I literally had no other future plans. I thought, why not try out? I'd seen Goats play a bunch of times before and I liked their music. We had some sort of mutual, sort of like, we were maybe even acquaintances at that point. Like, I'd met Rosie and Lottie on various nights out, chatted drunkenly, but we weren't like proper mates, but, you know, not too far away. Got in touch with them, tried out. I think they tried a few people out, but, you know, they picked me. And then, it was really nice. They made me feel really comfortable and welcome straight away. We had a few shows, like tours, to finish from the first record when I joined. And then after that, it was kind of straight into writing album two. So it was pretty good timing in terms of being like included in all of that and going forward as a group. So it was quite nice.
So you mentioned that you were acquaintances with the others in the band. Is that from the Windmill in Brixton?
Yes. How did you guess? Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Used to hang out there quite a lot. So, well, it's still would if we weren't in a lockdown.
So during the pandemic, there was a fundraiser album for the Windmill as well. And you guys had a record, had a track on that, I believe.
Yeah, I think that was, well, I think it was put together by Tim, who does the bookings there. But Aldous, who is one of the engineers at the Windmill, and quite a lot of the engineers at the Windmill do it sometimes. They do ask. Sometimes they take like a feed directly from the desk. And yeah, it was just happened to be a live recording that Aldous had done of that. And I think all the other ones were just ones from the desk as well. So it was pretty handy to put that out.
I think that's still up on Bandcamp, isn't it? I think if people want to hear that.
Yeah, I think it is. And yeah, obviously still trying to support these venues and raise money for them to keep them open for when we can go back, hopefully.
Yeah, definitely. There's been so much. I'm quite torn on a lot of this. There's been so much incredible stuff that's been done to support venues by people doing live streams, putting albums out. And, you know, I'm wearing a t-shirt from a band who gave the proceeds from this to a venue and stuff, which is brilliant. But at the same time, it feels like such a tragedy that it had to come down to the bands and the artists
for sure
to support these venues.
Yeah, I totally agree with that sentiment. I mean, it shouldn't be our job. You know, these things should be protected and funded. And I've talked about this before in like interviews and stuff. We were talking about how there should be some sort of like, almost like, you know, when old buildings are listed or something, some sort of protection where that venues can't be closed down for sort of cultural purposes. They should be protected in that regard. But yeah, unfortunately they're not. And it's become quite clear. I think a lot of things have become quite clear in this pandemic of like, I don't know, the people who care about these places are the ones that ultimately kind of have to do something about it, even though that's wrong, but no one else is going to do it, unfortunately.
There seems to have shown up a bit of a divide really between what culture in the UK is more valued, which is more supported, you know. And I think there's been so many great venues like the Windmill and, you know, like the Lexington in London and the Fighting Cocks in Kingston and places like that who have had to go about figuring out how they're going to survive on their own, whilst other, you know, cultural spots have been supported in a way that these venues will never be.
Yeah, completely. And there's ones even, you know, beyond that, like some good friends of ours run like a record shop, which had a venue in the basement called Sister Midnight. And they've just been sort of priced out, really, because they're not going to be able to keep that premises. Hopefully they'll be able to find somewhere else and start up a new venue. But a lot of places won't survive it. And it's really sad because venues were sort of on their knees before this happened. And it's just made it 10 times worse. So it's a shame.
It is. I'm going to move us on to talking about something happier. We're going to go on
again
to some other people. Oh, again, yeah. Let's see how many times we can say that over the course of the next sort of half an hour. So we're going to talk about some other people's music. So I sent you over a whole list of categories of different albums to potentially talk about. Thank you so much for sending those back. So I'm going to crack on with those. And the first one I'm going to go for, because I always think it's a very nice place to start, is the first album you ever purchased. Can you tell us what it was?
Yeah, so that one, I believe, like, it's the first one I remember like consciously wanting, and it was Bleach by Nirvana. And it's a bit of a funny story because I just bought it from like the weirdest place. I just got it from Asda because I think I was on the food shop with my mum, and I saw it. I really wanted it, and I begged her to buy it for me. I think it was like £3 maybe at the time, and yeah, I mean, she didn't know what it was, and it was only £3, so she got it for me. And then I just remember like blasting it in my room for so long and her just being like really concerned, because I think that was just like the start of my rebellious teenage phase. I think I must have been about 11 or 12 or something when I got that. and it's pretty heavy at points, isn't it? So,
oh, it's so heavy in points. Like, even the way that album starts with just that sort of rumble heading into the first track is just absolutely incredible. I was very glad when you sent this over, because it gave me an excuse to play it sort of 3 or 4 times over the last couple of days. I'm always amazed when people tell me what their first album is, and when it's something good, I'm amazed. So many people, you know, when I think about the stuff that I was buying early on, especially, or sort of my friends and my family and stuff like that, it's normally terrible. And then people come along and be like, oh yeah, it's, you know, Bleach by Nirvana. Nevermind or Inutro, it's Bleach. Like,
yeah, I think I didn't know what it was. I think I just like knew, I think I just knew that Nirvana was like a cool thing to like. And I don't think I'd actually heard any of their music before. And I think I just saw the cover and I was just like, yeah, that's that's what I want to listen to.
So you said this is the start of sort of your teenage rebellion phase then. What other stuff did you start listening to around this time?
That's a good point. I don't know if it's, I don't know if this is cool to discuss or not. I don't know. I guess I went through quite an emo-y phase, actually. Like, I started listening to lots of... Oh, I can't even remember, really. Like, I definitely... My dad was quite into Green Day, so he took me to see them. But no, lots of Nirvana. And then I guess it wasn't too long after that that I kind of got more into, like, Joy Division and bands like that. Maybe when I was a little bit older, more out of the, like... I don't know. I guess I went through like a sort of emo-y punky phase and then more into like a post-punky phase. Yeah.
I'm assuming then that your dad was had influence then on your music taste. You mentioned that he was into Green Day and he took you to see him and stuff. Presumably this was around American Idiot sort of time?
Yeah, it was American Idiot. Yeah, I think it maybe that did have an influence because my dad's just really into punk. Like, all the sort of, I grew up listening in the car to like Billy Idol also like a lot of ska music as well. And my parents are both really into ska music. I was actually nearly born at a ska gig because my mum went, she was 2 weeks like overdue or whatever, and she started skanking and then she went into labor. So I was actually born as the result of a ska gig that my parents went to. And weirdly, like, the lead singer from that band, it was a band called Bad Manners.
I know Bad Manners, yeah.
Yeah, so also, like, after that, I think they tell me that the lead singer of Bad Manners, Buster Blood Vessel, yeah, he found out that I'd been, like, sort of born after his gig, so he came to see me in the hospital the next day when I was born. So that's a pretty good story, I guess.
That's a really strong story. I enjoy that a lot. So presumably you started playing instruments around this time as well? Or did that come?
That was around that kind of time. I think I started wanting to play guitar when I was about 12. And I think I'm trying to remember what some of the first songs I learned. Probably, you know, like guitar Nirvana riffs and stuff. And then it kind of swiftly went more into the indie phase, I guess, as well, because like I'm like 27 now. So I guess around that time, that was kind of the height of like indie stuff. I remember listening to like all the early Kings of Leon stuff and like really loving that at the time and all of that kind of stuff. And then I remember like hating them with a passion when Sex on Fire came out and being like, oh, they're so not cool anymore.
I think I'm slightly older than you. I'm 31, so I had a very similar experience with Kings of Leon. Like that first album coming out and being like, yes, is this band that people don't know? And then suddenly it's your mum's favourite song a few years later. But cool. I'm going to go for the opposite end for the next category then. The most recent purchase. Can you tell us what it was?
Oh, yeah. There's actually another good story behind this. It was actually Tribe Called Quest. It was the 2016 album, which is called We Got It From Here, Thank You For Your Service. And I loved it when it came out at the time. And I don't know, I guess with records these days, we haven't had we haven't had any gigs, so I haven't had loads of money lately. So I kind of, with the records, I've had to be quite selective about things that I feel like I really love and like need to own. And this record, I just loved it so much when it came out, and I kind of realized quite recently that I didn't have it, and how the next time I ever do a DJ set, I really want to have it because I really want to play it. But it kind of came about because of another weird story with my family, which is basically, that when we released our new record, which was in the end of January, I actually had a cousin that came out the woodwork that I'd never met before, who'd seen my auntie like post about our record on Facebook. And she just reached out to me and was like, oh, yeah, I work with Q-Tip and I love your music so much, and I'm going to play it to him. And we were like, what? So yeah, she's been playing Q-Tip Goat Girl, and he said he thinks we're amazing, and now we might be maybe going to do a collaboration with him.
Wow, that's incredible.
And then I was kind of like looking into that whole rabbit hole of the Q-Tip world. I was like, I don't even own this record. I need to buy it. So that's what happened.
I mean, that's an amazing story. And I really want that to happen because that sounds like that would be incredible as well. So I'm going to assume then that you listen to Tribe's old albums, because this is their first album in like 18 years, I think it was. 2016 came out. Do you own any of the old records? Are you a fan of the old records as well?
I don't own them, but yeah, obviously they're very, very sick. So it's just good stuff to have. I think Ellie probably has a couple of their records. She's quite into like that kind of music as well. So yeah.
So this is a physical copy of it that you got, vinyl, presumably.
Yeah, I actually just assumed when I read that question, like default was just, I didn't even consider the fact that I might have like bought music online. I mean, I have bought some stuff recently because we put together like a mix for Soho Radio, and I didn't even think about that. I just assumed you meant like vinyl album. So yeah, this is the last like, yeah, physical record I bought.
So obviously this Tribe album, it's like all their stuff, it's got a strong political themes going through it as well, and this is obviously something that Goat Girl focused on various different song points as well. How do you react to being labeled a political band? Do you see that as a legitimate label? Do you see that as a good thing, a bad thing? Do you think that it could potentially take away from some of the other things that you're talking about?
I guess
would you guys label yourself a political band?
Sort of, I think, because what's political? No, but like there is an element of social commentary, which I think is quite characteristic of the band and the band's style, but I don't think it's exclusively that. I think we also kind of believe that making music should be authentic and genuine and honest, and it doesn't have to express a political message if that isn't what is genuinely being sort of felt. Or, you know, you can make music just for the pure expression of making music, and it can be about anything and nothing. So I think there's that, but I think it's just sort of like kind of inherent in the way that we think or who we are as people, and the things that are on our minds and the things that concern us, and that will kind of come across. So I think, does that kind of answer the question? Like, I guess like, not to a point where it would be forced, I guess.
I think it's really interesting because I've asked a few different musicians this question or questions along this line, and I've had very mixed reactions from a lot of people. Some people saying that yes, their music is political because they have a platform, they feel that they should be using that platform to speak, and some people saying it is political but it doesn't have to be, and not expecting people to speak about politics because they have a platform. And I think it's a really interesting distinction that some people make.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think with that, I don't know, I think it should always come down to genuine authenticity though, and like having that platform, yeah, of course, if you have the opportunity to sort of spread messages, and you feel that that's important to do that, then you should do that. And but at the same time, it's just like who's right or wrong about anything. I think it is, yeah, I don't know, it is important to do that. Well, we feel it's important to do that, but if someone else didn't do that, I wouldn't judge them for not doing that.
So the next album we're going to go for is the album that you most recently recommended. Can you tell us what it is?
It's an album called Shades by Good, Sad, Happy, Bad, which is, they used to be Mikachu and the Shapes, who, they're a group of musicians and friends based in London, consisting of Mika Levy, but also Mark Pearl, who plays as Suitman Jungle, who's a friend of ours. He's really great. Raisa Khan, and there's someone else in the band. I think they're a newer member who plays saxophone, and I think they've got a solo project called Lol K. So yeah, no, they're really cool. I love their music. I've seen them play. Oh, the saxophonist is called CJ Calderwood. And I've seen them play at the Windmill a few times, and it's I love watching them. Their music's so fun. It's really like quite simple, and very like genuine and not overthought or overcooked. And for me, it's just a celebration of friends making music together and just enjoying it for what it is. And it's really unpretentious. I think it's really, really great. It only came out at the end of last year, so it was a close contender for the last record that I purchased. But it's really amazing.
I hadn't heard this album, and so I was sitting on my sofa yesterday listening to the things you sent over, and I absolutely loved this record. I thought it was so good. Like, there's so many interesting things about it. It's quite eccentric in places, really. Like, I love the just random bits of saxophone that are thrown in, and like there's some really cool shoegaze elements and stuff to it. It's a really cool album.
It's so good. And like the guitar Mika's playing is like pretty grungy on it, and at points it gets quite heavy, but then it's also got this really like nursery rhyme childlike kind of quality to it. And the first track on it's just so weird. I think it's just an instrumental and you're like, what is going on? It's just amazing. And I was actually thinking, like, listening to it, if I could do anything, if lockdown ended tomorrow and I could do whatever I wanted, I think I'd love to just go to the Windmill and listen to them play this and like just jump around, and it would be just so fun.
I've only listened to this album. Like you said, they were formerly Mikachu, and there's three albums previously.
Yeah, I think so.
So I haven't done any of them yet, but they're going to be what I'm doing this week, I think, is getting more into those, because, yeah, this so much fun listening to this.
And they've all got like various solo projects, and Mika has put out like two records, I swear, like in the space of the last couple of months. They feel more like kind of sketches of ideas. Again, just really unpretentious and genuine. And they're all really great.
So you mentioned a moment ago that you're also an editor of a music blog. So you cover new music, and it's music that's like 3 days old or less, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so fresh. Yeah, I mean, it's not like my personal blog. I do it like I paid to do it for the people that created it.
And what's the name of it?
It's called The Most Radicalist. I write a couple of pieces a day, and then there's three other writers, but yeah, I'm just in charge of sort of posting them and stuff. But yeah, when I first started doing it, which is quite a long time ago now, maybe like four, maybe more years ago, I was like, oh, how am I gonna do this? Like, how am I gonna find two new tracks to write about Monday to Friday? And it's actually surprising. It's quite amazing when you start looking down that rabbit hole. There's actually so much amazing new music out all the time, and it's nowhere near as hard as I thought it would be. It's actually been really like an amazing journey. It's actually quite inspiring. It makes me feel quite good to know that there's like so much good music out there still happening today.
Is a lot of that then just sort of trawling Bandcamp and Spotify and you know, Instagram or wherever else?
Yeah, a lot of it, because obviously just being in that kind of music world, like a lot of it, I'll see stuff just through my like social media as well, like friends or friends of friends, people sharing stuff. And yeah, you see stuff on like other blogs, or you might like follow people on you know, various things like, yeah, like you said, like Spotify or whatever. You can see new releases of bands that you're into and that kind of thing. So it's actually surprisingly easy.
Does anything spring to mind of anything that you've reviewed recently that you think, yeah, this is definitely something people should go and check out?
Yeah, my two favourite new things, newish things, is Lava LaRue put out an EP pretty recently, and it's really, really, really good. It's amazing. And there's another artist who I really rate at the moment called H. Bernard. He's sort of like an avant-garde electronic-y sort of producer. And he also put out an EP recently. So neither of them have got albums out, I don't think, yet. But they're, when they do, I'm sure they'll be amazing.
Very cool. I will make sure I check them out. And I'll check out the blog in general as well. It sounds like, for anyone looking for new music, it sounds like a great resource. Presumably you can just jump in quite quickly, find something interesting, find something good, for something bad, all the rest of it. Yeah, that sounds...
Yeah, I think that's the point. I think that's the point of it. It's just like everything is so new. So it's sort of like, and we've got quite, you know, our writers, we've all got quite different tastes. It's quite diverse genre wise and stuff. So I think it's quite, there should be something for everyone.
Very cool. I will make sure there is a link to it in the show notes as well, so that people can find that quickly as well when they're listening. So the next category is going to be album with the most interesting backstory. What's the album and what's the story?
Well, this is, I don't know if, I wasn't sure if this was completely appropriate in terms of interesting backstory, but it's definitely got a very, very sad, upsetting backstory. And I don't know why, but Nick Cave's Skeleton Tree sprang to mind for me, because this album is just so beautiful and heartbreaking, and the context of it as well. Just, I don't know, it kind of sets it out in this other space. Yeah, I guess it's not that, it's quite a morbid thing to discuss, but this record just had such a massive impact on me. Like, just makes me, I don't know, I don't think I've ever heard anything so beautiful and so affecting. And it just never, ever gets old. There's a song on this album, I'll find out what it's called, with this opera singer, I think. And it's just the purest vocal I think I've ever heard. It's just so, yeah, it really is stunning.
So this album, a lot of the creation of this album, especially the second half of the creation, was documented in the film One More Time With Feeling, wasn't it?
Yeah, I went to see that at the cinema as well. Just cried the whole way through.
Yeah, it's an incredibly, you know, again, we'll say the sentence, we'll move on to something happier in a minute, but it's an incredibly sad story that, you know, Nick Cave's writing this album, and partway through the production of it, his son dies, and he goes back and he rewrites lyrics to the songs as well, and rewrites musically parts of it as well, I think as well.
Yeah.
And it's a slightly different Nick Cave album, I guess, in that it's a little bit more minimalist. It's certainly less polished than some of the stuff that he's done as well. But you're right, it's a beautiful album. As soon as you put the context around it, it is heartbreaking.
Yeah, and I think what I find quite interesting about it is it's quite nuanced, and it kind of deals, he talks about in the film as well, about how it kind of deals with him sort of like observing and processing like how his wife is feeling, and like gaining a new relationship with her and a new respect for her. And I feel like it kind of touches on that within the record. Yeah. And it's not such an explicit retelling of the tragedy that happened, but more of the ambiguous feelings around that. And I don't know, I just think it's really... Yes, incredible.
So I'm guessing you're a Nick Cave fan then.
Yeah, I'd say so.
For for people who don't listen to Nick Cave, and I'll broadly include myself in this, I listen to bits of what he's done. I've listened to bits of Grindr Man. I've listened to a few of his albums, but he's got such a dense back catalogue.
Yeah.
Where would you sort of recommend people start with him? Because, you know, he's on, just even as Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, I think he's on like 18, 19 albums or something at this point.
It's true. I mean, if I was going to say really, really, really start with him, then I'd say look up The Birthday Party, because that was his band before The Bad Seeds, and they were pretty radical in their time. Roland S. Howard was an incredible guitar player. And yeah, I'd say look at some of their stuff. There's a record called Junkyard, which is pretty blow your mind. But in terms of Nick Cave stuff, I'd say probably From Her to Eternity, which came out in 1984, would be a good place to start. And then following that, there's a record that came out in 86 called Your Funeral, My Trial. And both of them have this really sort of like ominous atmosphere around them. I don't know if they were both recorded at the same place in Berlin, but they're both just so, I don't know, they've got this sort of terrifying kind of energy around them that I don't know if I've heard that on many other, I don't know, he just has this ability to evoke this really dark feeling within you. There's a theme coming out in like all of these albums.
I didn't want to mention it, but
yeah, the inner darkness.
We'll go on to the final category then. I think we're going to hit, just looking at the time. So the final category is going to be your favorite album.
Oh yeah, this is so hard. Yeah, I mean, I said I chose this time to talk about Blonde Redhead's Barragan, and it came out on my birthday, so maybe that's got something to do with it. But to be honest, if someone had a gun to my head and I had to pick my favorite band, I'd probably say it was Blonde Redhead. So I had to pick something by them, even though, you know, that's like an impossible question really to answer. But yeah, I love them so much.
So people that don't know the band, people that don't know the album, how would you describe them, describe it? Sort of, what sort of genre does it fit into?
Well, they've been about for ages. They're kind of a cult band, really, formed in New York. So Kazu Makino is a singer from Japan, and the rest of the band is made up of two Italian brothers. And I think they formed in 1993, which was also the year I was born. So I don't know, there's something going on here. But they kind of make this really, well, I think what I like about them is they always evolve and change their sound. And in the beginning, they were quite loud and quite experimental. But they also have this ability to write these incredible emotional songs, and they're not afraid to experiment, but they also have this kind of melodic sensibility that I just connect with so much. And Kazu's vocals themselves are just amazing and unlike anyone that I've ever heard. And this record, I don't know, I think it saw them delving into like a more synthy kind of world. It came out in 2014. And it just really encapsulates this whole sort of, it's poppy and it's synthy, but it's really sad as well. But it's just in a really sort of beautiful juxtaposition between those things. And that's just something that I find myself gravitating towards in my music taste in general, almost like sad pop music, I guess. Yeah.
Is this the sort of thing? So this album, like you said, it's quite synthy. It's quite, you know, it's a dream pop album, I guess.
Yeah.
Is this an album you can go to and listen to at any time, any circumstance, or is it very specific?
Definitely. For me, I can listen to this anytime. And there's sort of, I don't know, they're just so masterful at their craft of like, there's some really gnarly guitar sounds going on, but then it's also so listenable. And I just think it's really sort of bold and brave, but really sort of enjoyable to listen to. And it's just really beautiful. And I really love it.
You sort of alluded to the fact that this question is near impossible to answer anyway, which is one of the reasons I like sending it out to people. But what other records do you think would be in your sort of top albums then?
Ever. It's so hard. I mean, probably my most played album was probably The Fool by Warpaint. That was massively influential on me when I was a teenager, but older, maybe like 19 or 18 or something like that. And that was like what kind of probably got me into like playing music in actual bands rather than just for myself. I just related so much to their music and the way they played, and it felt like how I felt, I don't know, it felt like how I could or would play. I just thought it was really powerful seeing sort of four women playing music together. And I just really related to it, and I loved that so much. So that's got to be up there probably. Probably something by PJ Harvey as well. I really love Let England Shake. I think it's so good. Be awesome. And yeah, Debut by Bjork is one of my favorite records as well.
Haven't done the Warpaint record yet, but I'm going to. Sounds really interesting and right up my street, to be perfectly honest, so that'll be on at some point this week as well. I think that's it. I think we've hit our categories that I've got written down.
Cool.
So we shall wrap it up here then. Thank you so much for coming on. So where can people find you? Where can they find the band? When are people going to be able to see you live? Where can people get the record? All that good stuff.
We're out there. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram, but we're not on Twitter. I don't know why. We're just not. And yeah, records available on our, we've got a website, goatgirl.co.uk, and you can get the record. You can get t-shirts, you can get tour tickets, UK and Ireland tour. I think it's kicking off like maybe the 14th of September, mid-September, and that'll be really fun. And then Europe in February, hopefully, unless there's any weird stuff with lockdown or Brexit or any of the other sort of impending doom things that are happening. Yeah, that's kind of what we're doing. We're just keeping busy, rehearsing, we've just started rehearsing. Going to make the live show really exciting, and we're going to write some new songs.
Very cool. Thank you. I am excited for the tour. Fingers crossed the plague goes away and that we're able to go and do all these good things. So hopefully. Holly, thank you so much for coming on. It's been great. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Alex. Thanks for having me. All right. See you later.
So that was my conversation with Holly. Again, I want to thank Holly for coming on and sharing her thoughts and her recommendations. We spoke about a whole load of things during that chat, and there's links in the show notes to various different band camps and blogs, as well as the names of the albums that we spoke about as well. I really recommend you go and check them out. There's some absolutely brilliant stuff in there. Interestingly, when we were talking about first purchases, Holly mentioned that her first gig was actually being taken to see Green Day by her dad. That was also mine, interestingly, being taken to see Green Day by my dad. I didn't ask her which show she went to, but I got a feeling it was probably around about the same time. But that's it for the episode. So don't forget to check out the links in the show notes, including links to Goat Girl socials. Don't forget to go buy tickets for their tour, because it's going to be absolutely brilliant and I can't wait for the shows. And if you enjoyed this episode, it would be great if you could rate us, subscribe to us, share it with your friends, share it on social media, do all that good stuff, or just at an absolute minimum, you can check out some past episodes as well. If you want to contact me, you can find me on Instagram at vinyl_tap, where I share pictures of my records, as well as what I get up to on a day-to-day basis, which I'll be perfectly honest, isn't huge amounts. You can follow me as well on Twitter at It's Record Time. I'm also on Facebook by searching It's Record Time Podcast. If you don't do social media, you can email me directly, itsrecordtimepodcast@gmail.com. Just a note for people who listen to the very end every week as well, I can also confirm that I am doing this edit on a Thursday night. I promise you one day I will be organised, but this week is not the one. Anyway, thanks for listening. Bye.